Welcome to the Michael Yu Podcast. We have a very special guest today, Shelly Smee, Managing Broker and Realtor Extraordinaire from our office here at Oakman Realty. Hi, Shelly.
Good morning, Michael.
How are you doing today?
Awesome.
Well, you know what? We're so lucky to have Shelly here to talk about real estate, business, life. And so why don't you share a little bit about your story and your background, Shelly?
Well, I came to real estate as a challenge. I had been working for an architectural glass artist who did a lot of custom homes on the west side and in West Vancouver, very high-end homes, people that could pay $10,000 to $100,000 for glass art windows for their homes. And we had a client who was the realtor and her husband was the builder. And she just basically encouraged me to look into real estate as a career. Because I really loved going to the homes and I really loved the aspect of being involved in that. And I also thought naively that it would be a great way to make enough money to have my own glass art studio one day. And 25 years later, I've had a great career so far in real estate. And as fate would have it, a very dedicated group of glass artists in Vancouver created the only cooperative glass studio in Canada 5 years ago, Terminal City Glass Co-op. And so that's kind of my studio now. Having my own space to do my own work, I think, will be more of a retirement goal. But in the meantime, I've expanded my skills in the glass art realm as well by being able to be a part of the co-op. So it kind of is in keeping with my philosophy that if you just keep trusting that it's going to work out, the universe finds a way for you to get things done.
That's amazing. So where did the inspiration or the starting for the glass arts come to fruition?
Well, working with Yves Trudeau at his studio back in the day, we're talking 1991, 92. Okay. I'm going to give away my age here. I was young and naive. It was my first sort of management job. I was brought in after working at a as an admin assistant at an accounting firm to be the studio manager. We had the first Macs ever put out that could do AutoCAD. And we had the first accounting programs created for Mac, so I got a really good opportunity to get a solid foundation in administration and marketing. I had also taken the marketing administration program at BCIT prior to that. So it, you know, for the time and for the place, it was an excellent opportunity to learn things creatively, as well as get an idea for what it takes to keep a business rolling. And you know, there were always those calls a couple of days before payday to all of our clients trying to get those next checks.
Right.
So being on the phone to collect checks is something that's been a theme in my career.
Hunting people down.
Well, just making sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, and that benchmarks and milestones in project-oriented situations happen, because, you know, you have to. One thing that I have learned about very artistic people, they're not necessarily the best business people. There are those unique individuals who can do both very well, and they are, you know, the super successful people. Like locally, somebody like Sid Dickens early on had an amazing concept and was able to bring it to market and scale it up and have just an incredible company and product. But there's not a lot of artistic people that are very skilled in the business world.
You know, and I find that really interesting. So Shelly and I have been friends for quite some time now, and I noticed, and I've met a lot of people within her, like her partner and her, you know, her friends around, and you hang out with a lot of artists.
I kind of do. I think I've been very fortunate in that, you know, I didn't just go full on into this real estate career and leave a lot of my friends behind. You know, growing up in the 80s, it was a very tumultuous time in the world. And the music that went along with that was very intense.
Yeah.
So, you know, growing up in that time period, I have to say I never really got into the negative side of some of those scenes, but I've certainly enjoyed the intensity and energy that a lot of rock and alternative rock and punk rock even brings to the forefront. And the thing that I think artists, regardless of their medium, bring to a culture is they tell the truth. And it's why they get in trouble. You know, whether it's their lyrics or whether it's some poster or it's a sculptural with a sculpture with some type of inflammatory statement. Artists are there to tell the truth, and a lot of times society can't handle the truth. So that's always been something that I've really revered in a lot of the artists that I follow and that I really care for. They're fearless. They're fearless in their honesty, and they're fearless in the consequences of what might happen of making their statements. And the real world doesn't really work like that. You have to have a little bit more finesse.
Yeah.
You know, in the business world, you know, you need to soften the rough edges and find the win-win.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily just make your statement for the point of making your statement, but really look for the win-win. And I think my background in sports has really helped me to understand that.
That's amazing. So what were some of your big influences, in either music or movies or in the creative space?
When I look at it holistically, I think really some of my biggest influences and I've gotten to the point in my life now where I don't really care what people think about my belief system, but I think what's really guided me is just looking at the thought leaders around the world. Oprah always gets cited, but Oprah's been fearless in her mission to expose things that people find uncomfortable to talk about and to bring some light into the world in sometimes very, very dark subject matter. And I think with my journey as a human being, finding the win-win and just having the confidence as you get older and when you see things happen the way they end up rolling out, to know that if you're doing the right thing for you in your gut and you know you've done the right thing and you've tried your best, things will work out. So finding that trust, finding that belief system that supports your ability to just let go of the outcome, not be attached to the outcome.
Right.
I call it engaged detachment. And I probably read it somewhere and I couldn't quote to you where I've
heard
it.
Sounds like a counselor would say.
Well, then there's that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And really, in our business, we are counselors.
Yeah.
We, and the really, really good realtors in our business understand that. They're managing expectations of people. They're managing fear. Because putting that big check down and committing to owning a property is a milestone in a lot of people's lives. And to be able to not only understand the logistics and technical aspects and paperwork and all the regulations we have and, the type of things that we have to do compliance-wise, but also the human aspect of it. You're managing people's fear, really, when you get down to it. And if you haven't figured out how to master your own, it can be a little rocky if you're too attached to the outcome, because it's not your outcome.
Right.
That's what a principal-agent relationship is.
Yeah.
You're helping your principal, your person you're working for, to achieve something, but it's not your outcome. You're not going to live in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your money.
Yeah.
So you have to have, in my opinion, a very high level of engaged detachment, where you're listening to people, you're helping them and guiding them with the process, but you can't be too attached to the outcome.
That's the first time I've actually heard that, engaged detachment, because, you know, my old sales coach back in the day, and it's a bit of a dichotomous approach, and he gave me the same type of advice, which was separating your role as an agent, as a real estate agent, from who you are as an individual. So you don't get emotionally wrapped up and tied into every transaction, into every engagement that you have. So in a similar engaged detachment, where like I know when I put on my crummy, wrinkly dress shirt, that it's like, it's my role, it's the time to fulfill my role as a realtor or whatever it is. But when I'm in my sweatpants, then I'm like the boyfriend or whatever it is. And yeah. So like having it from that separation standpoint. So Shelly, how long have you been a realtor for?
Well, in May, I will be renewing my license for the 13th time.
So 26 years.
26 from the day that my books in the mail from UBC. I went, oh my gosh, this looks like it's going to be hard. But it actually wasn't that hard once I got into it, mm-hmm. because kind of a nerd, like the whole studying aspect thing.
Right.
It was just another challenge to me. But I have to say the managing broker exam, that was the toughest thing probably I've ever done, mm-hmm. ever.
Yeah.
Because I'm a people, words, creative writing, HR type of person, and there is a lot of accounting and a lot of
mathematics
and basically the stuff that you'd learn if you were getting a financial MBA. So I found that very challenging as well, but it was a milestone I wanted to hit, because you know, every time I felt myself just getting a little bored or jaded in this business, I took another course.
So you were like a huge proponent of education then?
Totally.
Yeah.
You have to keep learning, mm-hmm. and lifelong education. You know, they've shown you're always creating new pathways in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, you know, playing games on your computer or listening to music or learning, anything you're learning helps to create new ways of thinking in your brain. So
I agree, and I think, you know, there's so many different styles of learning. You know, some people learn phenomenally well through you know, through observation, some learn through experience, some learn through reading, or some learn through videos or music or whatever it is. So what's the best way that you learn, Shelley?
I'm a huge reader. We moved around a lot growing up, and books were my friends a lot of the time, because we'd be in a new school or in a new place, and, you know, I always had my books. Even in grade 6, I had been in a school for 2 years, and they gave me an award for taking the most books out of the library. So for me, reading is key. You know, as technologies come on, I like to listen to things in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So audio books.
Podcasts.
Podcasts.
Yeah, maybe the Michael U podcast.
But I would have to say experiential learning is probably for me. I'm very visual. I mean, you know, I think that's why artistically, you know, I really appreciate a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a combination of things, both visual and reading. I found it interesting over the last 15 or 20 years as an adult that the realization that people have different learning styles is finally a thing.
Yeah.
You know, back in elementary school, I can remember, you know, you had to do things a certain way, and they only taught you one way. And the kids that weren't getting it got sat in a corner, got even taken out of the school and went to a different school because they were somehow learning challenged. I think we were societally challenged of actually recognizing that people have different learning styles. So I think it's great that schools now recognize that people learn in different ways.
Yeah, you know, and even in my experience growing up, and I was an awful, I was like a straight C minus D student. And I think it was just because of, I don't think it was because I, it's just the learning style, sitting in a classroom, hearing a lecture for, you know, 3-4 hours is something that like my ADD brain can't fathom. And so, but like I loved reading. And I loved learning through experience, you know, getting hands-on experience and things. So like, you know, I think as you get older and as you know yourself a little bit better, you get to like really engage in the things that really help you to absorb information and stuff like that. So you mentioned that growing up you moved around a lot. Why did you move around a lot?
Well, I kind of make the joke that was like being in the Army only with rocks.
Okay.
My dad's a very well-known geologist, geoscientist in that community. And when you are in a family of involved in the mining business, you go where the mines are, you go where the work is. And, you know, my dad is in the exploration side of things. He's now very well-known for his quality control programming that he does, but it just meant that we went to a lot of different places around the world. We had lived in Sydney, Australia.
Wow.
My kindergarten class trip was the opening of the Opera House, which I'll never forget because, you know, Queen Elizabeth, she actually waved right at me. You know, as a young child.
You became a dame.
Well, as a young child, seeing the motorcade go by and the queen waving at the crowd and stuff, I was convinced that she waved at me. But, you know, just having experiences like that and having to adapt and having to make new friends and seeing the example of my mom wherever we went that was a new place, she always managed to get us settled in really quickly, mm-hmm. and made friends all over the world. And I think that's really, really helped me to be the person I am today is just realizing that being open to change, being open to new experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, when I moved to Vancouver 30 years ago, I thought, this is it. I'm not moving. I'm not going anywhere else. I've planted my roots down here, but it was our second time in the Lower Mainland. We'd already been in Vancouver once before.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, my sister was born in North Vancouver.
Oh.
And
you were born in?
I was born in Edmonton.
Edmonton.
But we didn't stay there very long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really interesting. I think how people grow up, you can either like kind of embrace it and go like, so, you know, if it's like sojourning, like walk, like going into different cities and living, or it's this, you can go like the exact opposite and just like, and feel like, okay, I need a stable environment and a stable home. So like, I guess, did that happen for you?
How do I answer that question? I would say a lot of counseling and therapy has helped me to realize that it was actually a very positive aspect of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say I'm probably comfortable with the level of chaos that a lot of people aren't.
Right.
And that can sometimes be self-created if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think at this point in my life, I just feel blessed that I mean, I have solid groups of friends. I mean, Facebook, as much as everybody really hates it, I've reconnected with my grade 4 and grade 5 best friends.
Wow.
From Ottawa. And I've been out to visit a couple times when I was going for conferences for other things. And so that sense of community and that sense of connection, it's really up to yourself to maintain those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's also been really important over the last 10 or 15 years is you know, you figure out who your tribe is.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people that support you unconditionally. Those are the people that you can tell some outlandish things or you can share, you know, some wins with, and they don't judge you. They know that maybe you're just as nuts as they are.
Right.
You know, you
we're all a little crazy.
We're all a little crazy, and if you're not willing to admit that, you've got other problems as well. So there you go.
And so, like, in finding your tribe, like, so for example, when you're and I think Facebook or social media, some people think of it as in a lot of negative aspects, but there's so many positives, like Shelley was mentioning, to reach out. So how do those engagements look? Was it awkward? Was it strange when you did you send a message? Did you just comment on each other's posts, or what was the kind of spark?
You know,
or were you intentional about it, or was it just
it's kind of hard to even remember now, because who would have thought 10 years what we are 11 years on, it would become such a part of our social environment. But I believe it was just kind of one of those things of, I think it was actually, I was going through some boxes, and I found some photos of like my 9-year, or I think it was my 9th or 10th birthday. And there was a whole group of girls around, from Ottawa, from that time frame. And I just thought, oh my God, I wonder where these girls are. I wonder what everybody's doing.
Right.
And I was able to reconnect with two of my friends from the group. And of course, with women, it's sometimes a little more challenging because they get married. They mm-hmm. have different last names.
Yeah.
But I was able to track some of them down. And, you know, those people that you spend your childhood years with, those are the kind of friendships you don't need to talk every day. You don't need to sometimes even talk, you know, every month.
Mm-hmm.
But now with social media, you can kind of see what everybody's doing if they're posting. I think it's kind of a double-edged sword, the fact that we also have a marketing aspect of it in our mm-hmm. business. It makes it a little bit challenging, because, you know, I hate for any aspect of my job to feel like a chore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have these debates with people all the time about, is social media more trouble than it's worth? And I think, you know, I think from a marketing standpoint, from a business standpoint, it's just the reality of where we are in the world today. You can't really get away from it.
Yeah.
But from a personal standpoint, and from a, you know, from somebody of a little bit older generation, as a Gen Xer, I find the whole self-aggrandize, look at me, postings of selfies for any ridiculous reason, I find it really tiresome and kind mm-hmm. of weird. So I have this love-hate relationship yeah. with social media right now, where I'm kind of stunned at the level of buy-in that the entire world has with it.
Right.
But at the same time, it creates connection, and it creates knowledge that we never had before. But I think right. as an organism, as a human being, all that mental clutter can really get in the way of focus. Right? I'm finding that
right.
that's a topic that's coming up. I just actually finished reading a book about it. And it's, you know, it's something that we are going to have to evolve again as a species to manage that bombardment of information that we have all around us now. And I think that's going to be a new life skill, like focusing. It's like going to be the new life skill. Can you focus on one task for, even more than 10 minutes?
Yeah, I think it boils down to a few things. I don't like to turn a blind eye to things that are happening and changes that are happening in the world. You know, we really can't do that, because if we do that, then it allows for, it allows for people to kind of take control of that sphere, and not to, say that a lot of these big social media and tech companies are evil or anything like that. But I think we need to have mindful people, you know, kind of participating and also just observing kind of why these things exist. And I think it's an important part of business and in life in the future. I think it's gonna, like Shelly was saying, it's an extreme distraction. And I found myself like highly addicted to my telephone. You know, I've told many, many stories of, you know, my traumatic, dealings with looking at my phone when I'm driving. Which, you know, I did lose my driver's license because of that for a period of time. And, you know, and so essentially, you know, and it was an addiction. I think it's going to come down to self-control and a self-discipline. And people, because, you know, growing up in today's day and age, they're so used to, like, instant gratification. As soon as you post something, you're just kind of tracking how many likes you get. It's a very, you know, addictive type of, instant type of serotonin that kind of gets released in the brain. So to be really cognizant of that and how it could negatively impact your life in your relationships, I think is something to have that careful balance. And I found what was really a big eye-opener for myself was that Apple, and I'm glad that they did this, came up with something called like Face Viewer or something like that. It shows how long you're actually like on your phone for every day. And when I found out how long I'm actually spending on my phone and what segments of what like
there's an app for that.
Yeah, there's an app for that. There's like then it shows how much I'm actually being productive versus just looking at garbage. And I'm like, I mean, I'm just like wasting my life. So I really recommitted to reading more. You know, if I'm going to, like, every time I feel like I need to pick up my phone and just look and scroll through, I actually just pick up a book instead. And I've been reading a lot more by doing that. And I brought my screen time down in, like, 50% or something like that. And I've been really happy. I've been a lot happier, actually, mm-hmm. just and having genuine human conversations and stuff like that and trying to reach for those types of things versus reach for my telephone. I think it's... I think it's something that we need to participate in, though, and I think it's going to be vital. And if we shut it off, then you lose a lot of those pathways that could potentially come your way with, you know, like connecting with old friends and those opportunities that wouldn't present themselves otherwise. So I think that it is a bit of a double-edged sword, but I think we have control of that. And as human beings, we have free will, so like we get to have those, those internal debates. So it's kind of interesting and cool. So obviously, Shelly, you've been, a realtor for 25 years, or 25, 26 years. So all that experience and all those, the years, selling real estate for the people, if you could turn back the clock and talk to Shelly, that just got her license, knowing all the stuff you know now, what are the two or three things you would tell Shelly?
That's a really good question, because I often ask myself that still every day. There is no right or wrong way, I think, to do this business, but I think I probably dedicate myself to one or two segments. Real estate has changed with technology exponentially, even in the last 10 years. So, that what works for some people may not work for others, but I think early on, if I had been a little bit more focused on just declaring a neighborhood, what we call a farm area,
mm-hmm.
That might have made a difference. But I think the thing that people find puzzling about me sometimes, they've never really been about the money to me. Like, becoming wealthy and having lots of properties and, doing real estate for making an empire, as it were, wasn't really my thing. It was the time flexibility. I'm not training anymore, but, focusing more as a buyer's agent earlier in my career than a listing agent. I had a lot of managers at that time just give me the gears for it. It's like, but working with buyers in a bigger ratio than working with sellers allowed me time to train. It allowed me time to manage my time a little bit better than are a little bit easier than if I had a huge amount of listings that I was then needing to service. And it gave me a great income still. And it also, you know, as a young woman and now, you know, as I'm a little bit older, it gave me the chance to be creative and be entrepreneurial at the same time, mm-hmm. and still earn a really good living and meet people. It's about the people. For me, right. It's always been about the people, about helping them, about vicariously sharing in their experience of finding home, or in a lot of cases, I also have been a relocation expert through my career, having moved so many times, it was a natural mm-hmm. fit. And early on, I was with the Royal LePage system, and they have across Canada at the time, they had a very extensive relocation contracts with like the RCMP and government employees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I cut my teeth on a lot of people who were moving to Vancouver because they'd been transferred here. And I really empathized with that. I really got it,
mm-hmm.
Having been through, you know, what I went through as a kid. So, you know, I never really became the area specialist for a particular neighborhood. But I did, you know, I did try everything. I've had my property management license. I also have been really interested in some of the social housing aspects of our industry, and having seen how that's played out with different governments and where we are today with it being such a hot potato politically, and you know, in pretty much every jurisdiction in BC, housing is a huge issue. I mean, mm-hmm. you look in the news every day, we are on the pulse of the most controversial topic,
mm-hmm.
really, in the province when it comes to what people are talking about.
Right.
So, I found it really rewarding. But earlier on, what would I have done differently? I think it would have been easier on myself if I just focused a little bit more on a specialty, whether that was a neighborhood or whether that was, you know, committing to a certain market segment.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, but I don't regret how things have turned out at
all. Yeah. And, you know, going through your career and the different evolutions of it, and then over the past couple of years, Shelley is one of our managing brokers at Oakwind Realty, and we're so lucky and proud to be working with her every single day. And one of the, you know, kind of, I don't know about a secret, but I met Shelley maybe 5 or 6 years ago at a coffee shop. We had a good talk, and we did a transaction together probably like 10 years ago or
12,
so.
I think.
12 years ago or so. And I always remembered Shelley being very astute, very prompt, and very really cut and dry. And I like people that are,
I don't suffer fools very well.
Yeah, exactly. I like people that are direct. And I remember just meeting Shelley and seeing her candor and everything. I'm like, if I had a managing broker, my sister was my managing broker too, but if I had a managing broker, it would have been like Shelley would be like, if not my first choice, like probably my first choice, because she just tell me how it is, no, like don't cut the chase, and she'll protect. And she's very, and I've seen her with our agents here at the office, and she's really protects their interests, gives them the straight goods. And you know, that's the kind of that's what I like, and doesn't really beat around the bush. I found in the industry a lot of there's a lot of self-preservation with a lot of brokerages where they say, you should and in some places you should consult lawyers and expertise, but you know, for the most part we like the straight goods. So now in your role, your evolving role as going into the managing broker role, if you don't mind sharing, so how is that transition and what have you learned so far?
Well, I would have to say probably the most challenging aspect, like any agent in our business, is time management. And staying focused,
mm-hmm.
with all of the screens that are part of our business. I mean, you need to be on MLS looking at the inventory. You need to be checking your messages. You can't just check out and not be paying attention to what's going on. But what I've found probably one of the most satisfying things and what's really solidified my belief that this is the right time in my career to do this is all the change that our industry is going through right now and the focus on getting back to basics of what agency is. And having been a very strong buyer's agent through my career, it really saddened me with a lot of the negative press that a few bad apples created and right. the ripple effect in our industry. But in general, I think it's been a very positive move to have the types of new procedures that are really the same old procedures, but it's, you know, 5 pages of words to give to the consumer. So the consumer is never hopefully left wondering how they're being represented. Mm-hmm. And having the opportunity to speak with both new and experienced agents on how to navigate what's often a situation that really has no right answer. But there is an ethical way, and I mean, really ethics is about listening to your gut and doing what's best for having a win-win and not being attached to the outcome. So, you know, teaching those principles to people is a joy every day. And it really, I think the service that we provide, the human part of it, and I think we both are on the same page with this, is there can be logarithms, there can be, you know, lead gen systems, there can be all sorts of different tools that we're encouraged to buy into, but when it comes right down to it, you better understand how to relate to people mm-hmm. to be good in this business. And that also comes down to really listening. Mm-hmm. Really listening to people when they're telling you something and having the having the guts to ask difficult questions and have difficult conversations. I mean, in the last few weeks, we're in a changing market right now. Markets change. They mm-hmm. never stay the same. You've got to adjust and correct and provide the insight to your clients that they're looking for. And, right. you know, that's always difficult in a changing market because you have to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. You have to say, look, this is what's going on. I respect that you think this thing about this aspect of it, but here's what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And allow the other party, allow your client to have the information that they can make their own decision. But if you're not willing to tell them information that might be contrary to what their expectations are, then you're not really serving them. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that if people really get that really early on, that, yeah, you sometimes need to tell people stuff they're not really going to be happy about mm-hmm. hearing. But if you deliver it in such a way that you're providing them information so that they can hopefully come to their own conclusion, that's usually pretty successful. And they may initially be irritated at you because it's not meeting an expectation that they might have had. But in the long run, you know, I've had so many clients come back to me and say, you know, I'm so glad that you either pushed us or I'm so glad that you didn't push us. So that's another thing, is knowing when to push and knowing when to stand back. And all of that is judgment calls, right? How do you get to the point in your career where you make the right judgment calls? Well, that's experience. So I think every transaction builds towards the next one, and you just need to be really open to listening to where your clients are at in their process.
Absolutely. I think, a couple things. There's a quote by Socrates that I really like. I just read it. And it's, first seek to understand and then to be understood. So, you know, like Shelley was mentioning, to really understand where your clients are coming from, where what their opinions are, and really deeply seek to understand their point of view, their references, and really get curious about what exactly is motivating them, or what is kind of like, what's the nucleus for making this potential change or entering into this potential endeavor. So spending a lot of that time first, and then to be understood about, okay, these are the realities of the market. I understand your positioning from a human level, but here are the facts, and I'm not the one telling you the facts. Like, these are just the facts, the truth as it is. So, and when we're able to unpack things in that manner with people, they typically really understand, and they look at it. In that way of being very thankful that you understand them, mm-hmm. because when people feel like you understand them, they're more receptive. The walls really come down, and then you're just two human beings trying to solve a problem, and with all the variables and constants at play, then you obviously create solutions around those things. So I think Shelley hit it right on the head when she described, how to conduct a great human-oriented business. And I've been finding, I don't know about Shelley, but Shelley, you like reading real estate books, right?
Oh, God, I'm kind of a nerd. I haven't even unpacked two boxes that are still in my storage locker sure. from when I moved the last time. And I think one of the things I've always thought is that I should just bring them all into the office and buy us a bookcase and have the library, because just sitting in a box doesn't do anybody any good. But, right back from the day, the Danielle Kennedy, she was the lady who wrote the book in the 70s about baking cookies. Having the smell.
Oh, cool.
How to conduct an open house.
An open house.
All those old school sales techniques that when you get right down to the core of what a lot of them were talking about, it was finding a way to make that human connection.
Yeah. And I think, to what Shelley was saying, I've read, upteenth real estate books and how-to guides being how to be a realtor. And especially, I think I don't know how you feel in your research, but the Vancouver market is a very, very specialized place, and I think more so than most cities or most geographies, we're a very much referral town, and we're very much a word of mouth referral reputation town, and so. I really encourage a lot of business owners to treat especially their first customers or the first people that they work with, whether you're buying or selling property with them, like Shelley has done, to treat them so unbelievably well and to serve them super memorably. Because the businesses that thrive in Vancouver, whether it's real estate, restaurants, glass blowing, they provide an unbelievable customer experience and consumer experience, user experience. And then that leads to significant amounts of more business, where people are just lining outside of the door to work with or to eat at the restaurant or to go to this place. And it's really, I think, in Vancouver more so than many other places. I actually just visited Texas, where a lot of the books about real estate I read, like some of the owners that I read about, some of the authors were from Texas. I'm like, I noticed everyone eats at chain restaurants there. And everyone, it's just a different, different people, even
it's America.
Yeah, it's America. It's a very different.
America is very different.
Absolutely. And so, when you're learning and having, I think when you're reading something, it should stir up and stimulate your mind and your intuition as to whether or not this is actually going to work. And I feel like, you don't take on the whole a whole guide and say this is gonna be my business. In some cases that could potentially be the case, but for the most part you take the slices that you need for your business and you apply it for yourself. But I feel like in Vancouver, and what I've been discovering more and more, is that is very, very important. And
everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, everyone
and,
knows everybody.
You know, now that we have a more how would I put this? Now that we have a requirement to establish as soon as somebody walks into our open house, if they have an agent or not, and even a piece of paperwork that goes with that, it's always kind of interesting what people's response is. And I've gotten into the habit of asking people for the name of their realtor rather than asking them if they have a realtor.
Sure.
Because everybody knows at least 10 or 20 of us.
Right.
You know, you can, you, and it's, you know, we've evolved to this international city, but it's really a village.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody kind of knows everybody. You start talking, you can be at a dinner party and you can think that you're with a whole group of people that you don't know anyone, and you strike up a conversation, and before you know it, somebody knows somebody that you know.
Right.
So, you know, maintaining your own sense of who you are as a person, and putting that out there to the world to be, you know, somebody people want to trust, is, to me, has always been the most important thing. Because, and it's got to the point where one of my business coaches said to me about 15 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, why aren't you asking people if they trust you or not right at the beginning of the relationship? And that really stuck with me. So, you know, part of, if I'm feeling that there isn't the same level of trust, if our trust isn't on the same page, I will ask somebody, do you actually trust me? Because if you don't trust me, I can't serve you. I can't do the best job for you if I don't feel that you trust me. And there's been times, for whatever reason, you just don't have the right personality fit with people. And, you know, early on, it sounds terrifying to agents to say, oh, well, you need to learn how to fire people.
Mm-hmm.
But there can be people that waste so much of your time and lead you along, and in the end, you didn't have that conversation, or there wasn't that level of trust built up between the two parties for them to feel comfortable doing business with you.
Right.
So, you know, having, and then if you're working with people who really trust you, and you develop that clientele of those really solid people, they often refer you very similar people.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you've gotten over that initial early, you know, year or two of your career, you've hopefully developed the network of people that are like-minded people that you know are the kind of people you can work with really easily. And mm-hmm. it doesn't become, you know, it's not a struggle to put a deal together because that person's been referred to you. The level of trust is so much more natural,
right,
than a random cold call person that you go to meet for the first time.
Yeah, you.
And that's, you know, that's something that as you grow as a person and, you know, get a few years on in this business, you need to develop that skill of finding the common ground and, you know, in your initial sales training of developing the rapport. How do mm-hmm. and if the rapport isn't developing naturally, don't be afraid to move on. There's the right person for everybody, I think, out there, and having a good fit with your clients energizes you, it keeps you motivated. And it's, you know, it shouldn't be difficult.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do this, and I'm happy to do this almost, you know, with many, many of the agents at the office at the end of every year. I really prescribe to this, you know, it's kind of cliche, but they call it the 80-20 rule. So, I look at for my own business, I'll look at the sales that occur in the year, and it's so strange that the quote unquote easiest sales, the people that were very reasonable, that were kind, that I understood well, they understood me, you know, they were five times easier to work for, or more than five times easier to work for than some of these troublesome situations. I'm not going to say people, but they kind of, like Shelley was saying, they kind of emote, or they come, they have that, they send out the maybe a distrusting vibe or a skeptical vibe and so on and so forth. And they have, and you're always trying to prove yourself to them. And it's you know, creates a really, a strange, and you should choose your clients. You know, I think when you first get started, I think having those experiences are invaluable. But it comes in reflection, you know, when you look back at your day, or you look back at your year, or you look back at your week, or you look back at your month, and you really analyze, how was I spending my time, and was it effective, and like, am I like living the existence that I want to live as well, and being okay to say yes, and being okay to say no to certain experiences and to certain engagements that you have. So I think there are a lot of opportunities, but not every opportunity is a great opportunity. And I think it's something to really perceive when we're on our own in a lot of cases. And that's when, if I'm not sure about a certain situation, that's when I'm so glad that I have people around that I can count on, like Shelley as well. Like, so I can talk to her openly about, what do you think about this situation? Is this a good situation? And I feel at times where I've been like not doing that, I kind of get steered the wrong way. So Shelley, do you have someone like you mentioned that you have people in your tribe that you can kind of talk to about these things. So like, how frequent do you engage with these people and like?
Well, there's a really interesting phenomena that's happened throughout my career, that there are those clients that actually become really good friends. And, you know, you can't really, in my opinion, talk to those people too often about the challenges, because you know, it's not like you don't want to be real, but they're not in your industry necessarily, and they don't know the day to day. But as, you know, as some really close friends, we really trust each other. So I think that's part of the reason some of my really good friends have bought and sold real estate with me, because they trust me and I trust them and we're on the same page. But for business challenges and for frustrational challenges, I think your colleagues, and certainly, you know, being here at Oakwin over the last, I'm coming up on 3 years, I really feel like there's the camaraderie and the support of, you know, if you've had a challenging situation, you can just pull one of your colleagues aside and say, oh my gosh, you'll never guess what happened. What would have you done? Or how would you handle this? And mm-hmm. then people come to me with that exact same thing. And you know, being there for each other in the trenches is, I think it's part of what makes this company great and why people are coming here. And why I've, you know, early on when you said you were starting this company and you mentioned the values in which it was going to be founded, I was like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. That sounds almost too good to be true. How's that going to work? And I feel like my doubt at that time was where I was at. That's mm-hmm. what I was bringing to the table. That had nothing to do with you. And I think that sometimes we need a mirror. We need somebody who understands the context of what we're saying to say, yeah, well, you know, you kind of did this. This was your part in it. This is the responsibility
yes.
that you need to take for your part of it. But if you know you're really solid in your part of it, and it could just come down to the other person's having a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not internalizing other people's issues is it's an interesting and sometimes difficult world to navigate as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, is that my stuff or is that person's stuff? What did I bring to the table? What's my part in this? And that's a level of maturity that, you know, some people are really fortunate that they're brought up to kind of have that mindset, and others of us have to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, I really feel that that's really a huge part of it is having people that you can have those kind of conversations with that are going to be honest enough with you to go, you know what, you kind of did this, and you know, maybe you should have done that. Mm-hmm. And they're not intimidated, or they're not, or they care about you enough to right. be truthful.
To be
truthful.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
You know, that's a hard dichotomy to get your head around sometimes, because you think, well, if that person really cared about me, they wouldn't hurt my feelings. Well, they're my feelings, and I'm letting them get hurt. You know, there's that kind of, if somebody's telling you something without the intent of malice, and they're telling you because you were kind of a jerk, then you got to be able to say, oh yeah, maybe I was a jerk. So it's that again, it comes back to that honesty and that willingness and ability to be open to whatever's going on out there.
So, Shelley, an hour has
flown
by, but just I want to ask you one more question. And so this, you know, work life mixed all together, what would be three of the core values that Shelley Smee like lives by?
Truth. It's a hard one, because it comes with a lot of responsibility. Seeking, so being a lifelong learner, always, you know, having interest in things, and fun, you know, like, life's too short. If you can't find time for a little bit of fun in your day, oh my gosh, just crawl back into bed, don't even get dressed. So yeah.
Well, you know, I've learned a lot about Shelley, and just a lot about life and everything from this podcast. I'm just so thankful to have Shelley here. Thank you so much, Shelley, for being part of the podcast today.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you for creating an environment here. You know, it's the best place I could think to be at this stage of my career. So thank you.
Well, I just got chills myself. So thank you for listening today to the Michael Yu podcast. We really appreciate it. So if you don't mind, a little plug. So subscribe, and rate the podcast, hopefully 5 out of 5, and write a little comment. That'd be really fantastic. And Shelley, what's the best way people can get in touch with you?
Shelley@shelleysmee.com.
Great. So Shelley can be reached at shelley@shelleysmee.com, and she's revamping her website. We're actually going to talk about that a little bit, but we got sidetracked into philosophy and life and everything else. But maybe we'll save that for the next time we have Shelley on. So have a great rest of the day, everyone, and we'll go. Thank you so much.